Hello, this is Sarah with the News Gazette, dated July 31st. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Not Horsing Around. A cowboy does his best to keep his seat for 8 seconds Thursday evening while other riders work to ensure his safety during the Champaign County Fair Rodeo, hosted by Indiana's Barrett Pro Riding at the fairgrounds in Urbana. The fair gates open at 10 a.m. today, though most activities, including the carnival, aren't scheduled to begin until 5 p.m., with motocross set for 7 p.m. in the grandstands on Saturday, the last day of the fair. Events begin with goat livestock shows and vendors at 10 a.m. in Kessler Hall, the IPA tractor pull and carnival opening at noon, fluent Latin playing from 2 to 4 p.m., a truck show at 3 p.m., and the ITPA tractor pull at 6 in the grandstands. Carl Health, longtime doctor, healthcare advocate retiring, by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. After 43 years in medicine, roughly 32 of them in various positions at Carl Health, Dr. Kim Manili is calling it a career. The man who started as a Navy doctor says one of the things he's most proud of is the progress made toward improving generational health outcomes in Vermilion County, though it will take decades to fully realize the results. We are blessed in this profession to get to do something that matters, Manili said. And so I think that the biggest thing is, and some days don't feel like it, but every day you get to do something that's really going to matter to somebody. I'm very grateful for a most unanticipated career here. Every 5 to 8 years, I seem to have been doing something different, sometimes multiple somethings, he said, about working with the new medical school curriculum, population health, residency and management, and teaching has always been a lot of fun. He said he plans to keep his affiliation with the Carl Illinois College of Medicine and do something with that. Manili, who's originally from Missouri, began his work with Carl at the South Clinic in Urbana. Eventually left to run the systems residency program for a decade, then came back. Over the years, he's also filled medical director positions and was associate chief medical officer during the COVID-19 pandemic. He's been in and out of Danville most of his career, either filling in or being in management. He moved to Danville in late 2020, bringing along his practice to the new Carl at the riverfront. It's a fine facility. It is full now. We're at that problem where already we've got everything. Every nook and cranny is full of practitioners, he said of the campus that opened 3 years ago. The overall campus itself, with Christie Clinic at the other end and some building space not being used yet at Gilbert and North Streets, still has room to grow, he said. It's been a great place to practice. Patients seem to love it, Manili said. People know each other. They work well together, and they've got a real community spirit. It's a very engaged community. Part of that effort in working together has been with the Vermilion County Collaborative for Healthcare. The area received a $28 million grant over 5 years from the Illinois Department of Healthcare and Family Services to support health initiatives, including Heavenly Square Grocery, which opened off Bowman Avenue in a former food desert area of Danville. Community health workers helping patients with chronic diseases, behavioral health, the Recovery is for Everyone van, and a community garden across the street from Carl at the riverfront. All this is bearing fruit and vegetables off of the initial seed money, Manili said. Manili said the grant is in year four, but it's being extended for another 5 years in a reduced amount. Juliana Sellett, Vice President of Community Health, will be overseeing the local collaborative after Manili's retirement, and Manager Laura Contreras is staying with the program. In regard to the collaborative, Manili said they've gauged the effectiveness of the garden, with it being fortunate to have an educational component, and seeing project success and other students and neighbors visit and benefit from it. The kids come out and harvested early vegetables like kale and such. And with that, they ended up having a lot of neighbors come by and pick it up, he said. In addition to community garden outreach, Manili observed that the Heavenly Square Grocery isn't being used to its fullest and can use support. They've done incredible work to overcome a lot of obstacles, he said. Not the least of which was the fact that when they had the building and thought they were all good to go, and it turned out they had really the best of 1980s refrigeration, and it kept breaking down. So they finally found their way around that, and we helped them a little bit with that. I think they're going to be putting in a deli, and they're being kind of innovative now in what they're offering. We would prefer to see much better foot traffic, Manili said. The closing of County Market in Danville might impact the store. However, he thinks it loses people to the Dollar General market stores, even though those stores don't have a lot of fresh produce and items, Manili said. He also added that as part of the grant, Carl plans to add new addiction medicine employees probably next summer. Image shows Dr. Tim Manili, shown in his signature wide-brim hat and white shirt and bow tie, at the Carl Community Garden in Danville. Mahomet Seymour Schools. Board likely to put bond sale for junior high before voters. Officials say proposal wouldn't involve any increase in tax rate. By Janet Wiersema. Mahomet. Residents of the Mahomet Seymour School District might see another referendum on the ballot in November, but with a twist. This one won't come with a tax rate increase. The school board will vote Monday on a resolution to put a referendum on the ballot that, if successful, would authorize the district to issue $84 million in bonds to build a new junior high with no increase in the district's tax rate, Superintendent Kenny Lee told the News Gazette. The proposal comes after a review of results from a recent survey seeking the community's input on long-term facilities planning. Some 80.2% of respondents were in favor of just building the new junior high. That's a strong message from the community, Lee said. District officials said that the new junior high would be built on district-owned land along South Mahomet Road and could hold 900 to 1,100 students, depending on the number of students per classroom. If the referendum succeeds, the new building could be complete in fall of 2029, officials estimated. Administrative and technology staff would move into the current junior high building at 201 West State Street as part of the proposal. The current junior high was built to hold 615 students, but now houses 811, which has led the school to use portable classrooms and split some of its classrooms in half using temporary walls. Survey results showed that proposals from the school district that involved issuing bonds for other projects at the same time as the new junior high were much less popular, likely due to the fact that doing so would require a tax rate hike. 80% favor is favor for zero change to the district tax rate, marketing consultant Yes HQ wrote in a July 20th presentation to the school board. That support will carry to November only as long as the claim stays clear and credible. Additionally, the firm noted that the survey responses are no guarantee of voter turnout, which means that getting the word out will be important. Lee said while the plan to build just the junior high doesn't involve a tax rate increase, the state requires the district to put the item on the ballot in order to receive authorization to issue bonds. This is a zero tax rate increase, he stressed. However, he noted that the total amount on an individual's tax bill could increase or decrease due to other factors, such as changes in property values. The district previously sought to fund construction by increasing its property tax rate, but voters shot down three different referendums in 2022 and 2024. District officials announced in late June that, for the first time, Overcrowding at the junior high can be addressed without raising the tax rate due to factors such as retiring debt, increasing county sales tax revenue, and local economic growth. The school district released a survey at that time to gauge public interest in three different options. Issuing a bond for just the new junior high was option one. Option two was to construct a new junior high and a multi-purpose addition at Lincoln Trail Elementary for physical education. This would mean a bond of $98 million for the two projects, which would be estimated to raise the property tax bill on a $350,000 home by about $191 annually, or about $16 a month. On the other hand, option three would require a $127 million bond and raise the tax bill on a $350,000 home by about $498 annually, or $4,150 per month. This option included the new junior high, the multi-purpose addition at Lincoln Trail, along with classroom additions and updates to the school's library, cafeteria, and building systems. It's estimated that the work would increase Lincoln Trail's capacity by 200 students. Converting administrative spaces at Middleton Prairie Elementary into instructional and student support space. The number of people in favor of option one was higher than I had anticipated, but other than that, there weren't any surprises, Lee said of the survey results. History. Area history in 1926. A local murder mystery, the July 22nd shooting of Morgan Knox, had become more complicated with the murder, or suicide, of Champaign's real estate agent Anna Carmody, who some community members were accusing of Knox's death. Knox was in debt to Carmody and had assigned a $3,000 life insurance policy to her. The night before she died of a bullet to the head, Carmody gave a friend a letter that accused Sheriff John Gray of spreading rumors about her, blamed him for her imminent death, and closed with curses on John Gray. Gray denied any involvement at all. In 1976, University of Illinois Chancellor J.W. Pelchison addressed the newly formed Study Commission on Intergovernmental Cooperation and applauded the group for taking a hard and critical look at single problems involving multiple governments. Pelchison submitted a list of the many agreements that existed between the university and the cities of Champaign and Urbana. The formal agreements listed only touched the surface, though, Pelchison said. Everything the university does affects either one city or the other, sometimes both. We have countless informal arrangements with departments, and I have nothing but praise for the cooperation which is evident. In 2011, since January 2010, when you bought a pair of pants or a refrigerator, put gas in your car, or ate at a restaurant in Champaign County, you paid 1% more in sales tax. That school's facilities sales tax had generated almost $20.78 million for school districts to use to construct new buildings, update the ones they had, or pay off building bond debt. The building boom would not have been possible without the money districts that were receiving from the sales tax, officials said, and a look at the tax levies for some of the districts shows they were levying either less or nothing at all for building bond debt. International history on this date. In 1715, a fleet of Spanish ships carrying gold, silver, and jewelry sank during a hurricane off the East Florida coast. Some of 2,500 crew members, more than 1,000 died. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today. Courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with, on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversations in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@news-gazette.com. Ash Knorr's journey as a bartender began 13 years ago when she sought out a fun, fast-paced job with a lot of variety. "I quickly realized bartending was a great fit for my personality," she said. She's been working at Mug Shots in Ashcombe for 8 years now, traveling with the mobile bar, which folks can hire for their events. "One week we might be serving drinks at a wedding, or the next weekend we're in a backyard celebrating a birthday," Knorr said. "It's great getting to meet new people while also seeing familiar faces at local events." Mugshots not only serves drinks, she said, but also works with clients to make sure events go as smoothly as possible and guests have a great time. Her favorite aspect of the job is meeting people and being a part of special occasions. "It's rewarding knowing you've helped make someone's event more enjoyable," Knorr said. "Some of my favorite memories are seeing everyone out on the dance floor at weddings, celebrating milestones with friends and family, and getting to be part of so many happy moments. Every event has its own fun stories, and that's one of the best parts of the job." Outside of the bar, Knorr also works as a school lunch lady, using the same people skills to serve up food like she does drinks. She also enjoys spending time with her husband, daughters, and other family and friends, as well as getting outdoors and traveling. Mideast conflict. Why is the war broadening? U.S. and Iran have been drawing more allies into fight. By Susan Fraser and Joseph Kraus, The Associated Press. Ankara, Turkey. Houthi rebels in Yemen said they attacked Saudi oil facilities. The Saudis blamed militias in Iraq and joined the United States in bombing them. Iran fired missiles at Jordan. Drones set ships ablaze in Egypt. But it's not actually as complicated as it sounds, and it's all related to the broader war between the United States and Iran, currently focused on the Strait of Hormuz. Iran supports armed groups across the Middle East that allow it to project power far beyond its borders. The U.S. has thousands of troops based in allied Arab countries that have been targets of Iran's retaliation. Here's a look at why so many fronts seem to be heating up at once. A struggle over the strait. The epicenter of the latest violence is the Strait of Hormuz, an elbow-shaped passage running between Iran and Oman that carried a fifth of the world's traded oil and gas before the war. Iran says it controls the waterway and has attacked ships attempting to use an alternative route overseen by the U.S. military along the coast of Oman. The U.S. has struck Iran in response, saying the strait should be open to all international traffic, as it was before the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran on February 28th. When the U.S. strikes Iran, it retaliates by firing missiles and drones toward Arab countries hosting U.S. forces, like Jordan and Kuwait. The exchanges of fire in recent weeks led to the collapse of an interim agreement aimed at winding down the war. That has deepened mistrust on both sides. At this point, Iran appears to be more interested in cementing its control over the strait than in making a deal with the U.S. to lift international sanctions. Yemen's Houthis are wading in. The Iran-backed Houthis in Yemen, who stayed on the sidelines during the initial phase of the war, have declared a blockade on Saudi Arabia, threatening shipping through another major trade route leading through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the Red Sea up to Egypt's Suez Canal. The Houthis also claim to have attacked Saudi oil infrastructure near an east-west pipeline that the kingdom has used to ship millions of barrels of oil since the Strait of Hormuz has been effectively closed. The Houthi-Saudi tensions are rooted in a separate but related conflict going back more than a decade that seems to be reigniting. But it also presents a new front on which Iran could pressure a key U.S. ally and potentially choke off more of the world's energy supplies, with effects far beyond the region. Ambry, a maritime security firm, has recorded over 10 transits that U-turned in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden since the Houthi naval blockade against Saudi Arabia was announced. Bab el-Mandeb transits have been down 30% since July 21st compared to June, according to the latest Ambry data. Saudis take aim at Iran-backed groups in Iraq. Earlier this week, Saudi Arabia accused Iran-backed militias in Iraq of launching drone attacks on its oil facilities for two straight days. In response, U.S. and Saudi fighter aircraft bombed militia sites in Iraq, killing at least 20 fighters and 6 Iranian advisors. Iraq has close ties to both the U.S. and Iran and has long struggled to balance them. Since the start of the war, it has been in a literal crossfire. The government condemned the U.S.-Saudi strikes, saying they came as it was trying to investigate what had happened. The Popular Mobilization Forces, a collection of armed groups close to Iran, are officially part of Iraq's security forces, but often act autonomously, including by attacking U.S. forces stationed in Iraq. American forces are due to finish their withdrawal from the country at the end of September, and the Iraqi government has vowed to disarm non-state actors or incorporate them into the military. But those efforts could stall as the wider war rages. The remaining U.S. forces are based in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdish region, which is also home to armed Iranian Kurdish dissident groups. Iran has attacked both over the course of the war. Drone attack on Egypt signals a possible widening of the war. On Wednesday, a drone attack on Egypt's Mediterranean port of Damietta set two natural gas vessels ablaze, including a U.S.-owned floating storage facility. No one has claimed the attack, and the Houthis have denied responsibility. Egypt, a close U.S. ally and regional mediator, is one of the only countries in the Middle East to have avoided military involvement in the war. Israel is on the sidelines for now. Israel, which took part in the initial weeks-long bombardment of Iran and was repeatedly targeted by Iranian missiles earlier in the conflict, has remained on the sidelines since the interim peace deal. The Iran-backed Hezbollah militant group fired rockets into northern Israel shortly after the outbreak of the war. Israel responded with an aerial bombardment and a ground invasion. It has since occupied, depopulated, and destroyed large parts of southern Lebanon, saying such measures are necessary to root out militants. A June 20th truce has largely held. Israel and Lebanon's governments are currently implementing the initial stages of an agreement in which Israeli forces would withdraw and Lebanon's army would move in. The deal also states that Hezbollah must be disarmed. The group has rejected the deal and could violently resist any attempt to forcibly disarm it. Any attack by Iran, Hezbollah, or Israel could reignite these hostilities, reopening yet another front. Image shows sailors from the Navy of Yemen's internationally recognized government stand at machine gun positions aboard a vessel patrolling a shipping lane Monday off Hanish Island in the Red Sea. A Houthi spokesman said last week that the rebels were not blocking traffic through the strategic Bab el-Mandeb Strait, after they decided a maritime embargo this week on their foe, Saudi Arabia. The Iran-backed group attacked a Saudi ship in the nearby Red Sea after announcing the blockade, which threatens the top oil exporter's ability to get its supplies to the world following Iran's parallel blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, the kingdom's only other maritime route. Magnitude 7.1 earthquake in Japan. Survivors camp in cars, classrooms as search for victims continue. Kumamoto, Japan. Residents in southwestern Japan camped in classrooms and vehicles Thursday, stocked up on water, and tried to get back to normal 2 days after a powerful quake set off an explosion at a mall, toppled a factory chimney, and flattened homes in a disaster that killed at least 25 people. Time was running out to find survivors, as rescuers continued to work in the Kumamoto area, on Japan's southern main island of Kyushu, where the magnitude 7.1 earthquake hit Tuesday. The number of people missing was unclear. Of the deaths given in the latest tally, 25 have been confirmed as related to the disaster, but there were 9 more deaths under investigation as likely to be connected. The Kumamoto prefectural government said, "The quake left at least 86 people injured, 5 of them seriously," it said. Thousands of people spent another night at evacuation centers set up throughout the area at schools and other big spaces. Some homes were still without water or electricity, while others were simply afraid to go back. Nearly 19,000 homes were still without electricity, and more than 9,000 people were staying in the roughly 400 shelters, where power sources were being added to provide air conditioning. Concerns were growing about illness, including from the sweltering heat. The Ministry of Environment set out a heat stroke alert for the Kumamoto area, with temperatures rising above 91 Fahrenheit on Thursday. In the town of Haikawa, one of the hardest hit areas in Kumamoto, many residents are without water or electricity or both, and some were staying inside their vehicles in parks, at the town hall parking lot, or outside their homes. More than 800 of the town, of about 4,500 households, were destroyed or damaged, officials said. Image shows rescue personnel working Thursday at a home damaged in Tuesday's magnitude 7.1 earthquake in Yatsushiro, Kumamoto Prefecture, Japan. GG Press. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the July 31st News Gazette. Please stay tuned.